through the work that's been done. We, of course, the five of us are in charge with the leadership and management of a big corporation, happens to be a mutual, a municipal corporation, happens to have the only governing structure of its kind in the United States. And so, therefore, the administrative and management models that we create have to be adapted to this structure. And we took on that set of questions in the inquiry that we're here going to go through this afternoon. Bunch of things I'm very happy about in this work that's been accomplished in a relatively short amount of time. One is that we were able to acquire the advice of this great panel, a huge amount of lived experience in the issues of managing big public and private organizations. And then we have Fred Miller as our acting CAO, and he brings a great deal of both public and private expertise in managing big organizations as well, and was in effect a consultant to this process as well as part of the city team in this work. And Fred, it's been great having the synergy between you and our advisors, and then the good work that's been done at Moss Adams. So I think it was the right moment for us to take on this work and the right set of players working on it together. Again, I just really appreciate the amazing expertise that this group of advisors brought to this process. They really rolled up their sleeves and went to work with the Moss Adams team and got a lot done. So the purpose of today's discussion is for them to walk you through this work product, which I think you all have and had a chance to look at, and really focus on the top tier level recommendations coming out of that work, and have a good discussion among us before we take this farther forward into more formal changes, the ones that are recommended. So Mark Starker with Moss Adams is here to take us through that, and I'll turn it over to you now, and we'll have as much time in discussion and inquiry as we can manage here this afternoon after what turned out to be a rather long council session this morning, but I think we've all recovered and gotten our blood sugar back up, so I think we're maybe ready to work. We might have to slip Amanda some M&Ms or something. Keep going. Mark, please.
Well, Mr. Mayor, thank you very much, and other members of the council. I've never felt so supported. I feel like I have a posse here with me, which is
yes,
awesome,
you
including you, Fred. Yeah. What I thought we'd do is, as you said, go through sort of the tier one recommendations. Those are certainly the ones that are probably most of interest to the council. Of course, happy to explore, discuss, answer questions about anything that's in the report. I'll have to admit I had to reread it yesterday and today, since it's been a little while since we were done, right? You can all say that too, right? We had a little break from it. It was, when we go through these, it's not sort of a throwaway comment to say a lot of our success depends on the level of engagement of the client. And certainly when you're doing a management review, personnel are understandably concerned, is my job at stake, et cetera, can I be candid? Like most of our experiences, but certainly not all, the participation of not only the council members, which were our first set of interviews, and folks from both within OMF, and we talked to virtually all of the bureau and office directors outside of OMF, that we really felt like we got a very comprehensive, insightful look at how the city works, what's working really well, what are opportunities for improvement, and that made our job a lot easier. Having the advisory committee is not typical, we sometimes do, but we certainly were very benefited by having that. Not only did they keep us on our toes and make sure that we're doing good work and doing our best work, but of course, bringing ideas to the table. I think we saw things very similarly, which was also made life easy, but this committee really gravitated to the meat of matters, as Mr. Mary, I think you saw in the committee meetings, which was great. And that's sort of a good segue to, you know, our charge was literally to look at OMF, but it's very difficult to look at inside a box when things outside of the box affect it. And so as we went through this process, we were looking at, well, yeah, how does OMF work as efficiently and effectively as possible, but how do the management and finance needs of the city get addressed as efficiently and effectively as possible, which is not obviously just limited to OMF. There are those needs at the council level, there are those needs at the bureau director level, there are those needs within OMF, and so the discussion naturally went to how do we best find ways to help the city, given some of the uniqueness of its structure. Like all things, there are advantages and disadvantages to any way you choose to do something. The commission form of structure, in a way, sort of the joke was, in 2013, that was 100 years of that in place. It was 100 years for Moss Adams to have been business. So it's kind of a nice little coincidence. And our charge certainly wasn't to try to unravel the commission form of government, but it was how do we nuance it in a way that helps you best meet your needs. And that's really, to a large extent, where the study sort of migrated. That's certainly where the tier one recommendations tended to migrate. And so why don't we go through those briefly? And really, I'm going to touch on four topics: structure, leadership, governance, and management tools. And if we just think, we kind of used, or I kind of used in our advisory committee meetings, a lot of this was about just how do we reach across the city at both the council level and the bureau director level and get the city working all on the same page. So instead of 29 or whatever the right number is, bureaus and offices, how does one city make decisions, execute decisions in a way that's efficient, that's effective, that you all know where you're headed, it's not siloed. And so a lot of it was this kind of reaching across and how do we facilitate that reaching across. So I'll start with structural. And I don't know if any of you, what we should have done was, I know you'll remember we had briefings, and maybe I'll just put that in as kind of in the middle of the table. There were sort of seven elements of structural change that we recommended through the study. And they're not necessarily in any particular order, but I'll go through them. And thank you. Page 10, without the benefit of the 1 through 7, the seven different types, on the top of page 10. So the first was working towards consolidating and integrating the financial activities that exist within OMF. And so the first recommendation was to create a bureau of revenue and finance with someone appointed to a director of that bureau. And that bureau would contain four components: accounting, revenue, public finance and treasury, and grants. And that's simply just taking the financial activities that exist within OMF, getting them under common leadership, and getting them within OMF all operating kind of on the same page in a more cohesive, coordinated manner. That had changed a little bit with when the CFO position was not refilled. Things were distributed a little bit, and this is bringing them back a little bit more integrated and coordinated fashion. Second, and directly related to that, was the question about, well, what to do with the city budget office. That had been part of OMF. We looked at the various alternatives. Should it stay outside of OMF? Should it go back within OMF? Should these other finance activities be integrated with the city budget office? I think it was clear to us that the changes made relative to the city budget office, i.e. pulling it off separate, have been working, that collectively, we feel like the needs that the services that the city budget office provides have been more successful in that structure than it had been. And so our takeaway from that was, let's not mess with it. It's working. And so our recommendation was to continue with the current structure. And our only very slight caveat to that was the charter via ordinance of the city budget office was kind of threefold: financial planning, forecasting, budgeting. Its core business is budgeting. And we just wanted to make sure that it was clear that that was its core role as leading the budgeting. And then secondly, that as we do work on the long-term financial forecasting, long-term financial planning, that's an integrated activity across the city. So participation of CAO, the Bureau of Revenue and Finance, City Budget Office, and key representatives of certainly your larger bureaus who have significant, obviously, financial needs, financial activities within them, that becomes an integrated, multi-discipline activity across the city. And with those two things happening, we don't see any reason to change the structure that you've created via ordinance for the City Budget Office.
Can I ask you a question?
Absolutely. Yes.
And the structure, and I may be just missing something, but where did payroll come?
Payroll is still within. Yeah.
So it shows up which boxes it should work.
Well, it's within the second box down under HR. And actually, let's talk about that for a second, because payroll was a discussion item. We could say, like the budget office, we did look outside of the city of Portland. How do other cities of somewhat comparable size deal with the budget office? I'd say it's kind of six of one, half a dozen the other. In some cases, budget office will be within the financial structure. In some cases, it will be separate. Like many things, I don't think there's a right or wrong. I think the right is what works for the particular city in this case. In that case, it's working. Payroll is somewhat similar. You'll see payroll within finance. You'll see payroll within HR. Depending on who you ask, what might be the better solution? There might be debate, is it working optimally today? I think that it's working. There's no right or wrong. There are advantages and disadvantages to each. What I would say is I would certainly look to the CAO if that's something that over time, for some reason, needs change. It's within the overall bureau, the CAO's bureau. If there needs to be adjustment there, that can always be made. We didn't see something that said to us there needs to be a change. But easily could have been. I mean, that's one of those. Could go this way, could go that way. Absolutely, yeah. Please interrupt me at any time. The third. So the CAO's current span of control is a little bit too large. And so creating the Bureau of Revenue and Finance will help to reduce some of that span of control challenge. What we're recommending to continue to report to the CAO, in addition to the bureaus that exist within OMF, are business operations, policy team, and citywide projects. Citywide projects operates very autonomously right now. It's works just fine. The business operations and policy team are really support functions to the CAO. They make sense to continue to work in that direct reporting capacity. Those with the remaining bureaus, human resources, internal business solutions, BTS technology, Bureau of Revenue and Finance, that's a manageable, that's seven direct reports. That's within the comfort zone. The fourth item was EBS, Enterprise Business Solutions. So that is your Tier 1 SAP group. They are, in essence, solely responsible for driving that technology within the city. That's all well and good. I think the city would benefit for that group to be integrated within BTS, a Bureau of Technology Services. BTS, we've kind of looked at their there BTS and EBS is kind of on two trajectories. BTS has been on the scaling up its focus on enterprise solutions for the city. EBS was created to really focus on SAP. SAP obviously is your tier one enterprise solution, and getting those groups integrated again makes sense, just like the financial activities. And I certainly think there's internal support for that. The fifth item within BTS, there's also a span of control challenge there. I believe there's 10 direct reports today to the director. There's a vacant deputy director position. We're just recommending to fill that position, restore the groups within BTS that were reporting to that position to make the span of control more manageable. BTS is arguably your busiest, most highly taxed group within the city, just with the virtue merely of what's happening in technology and the ability to keep up with it. That makes you like almost every other city. So I think that deputy director position is needed. The sixth and seventh are slightly shifting in terms of topic, and there are two centralization recommendations. The first one's relative to revenue collection. That is a highly decentralized activity in the city right now. I think that this is one of this is hypothetical because we didn't do the analysis to confirm this, but arguably the greatest opportunity for the city from a cost savings or revenue realization opportunity to centralize that. And that doesn't mean going from, you know, black to white, A to Z in terms of making a tremendous switch overnight. Things like that are naturally done on a progression, but where if we could centralize those activities more into revenue, sort of where the revenue collection professionals are, I think that there would be great gains within the city of take us for example, our firm, as I'm sure that the panel members would, you know, we're looking at it AR all the time, and you know, where is that 60 days, 90 days? And I bet if we did an analysis of the city did an analysis, they would find that their AR is fairly out there, and that's the opportunity to improve cash flow, improve collections, period, would be realized. And so that's the genesis there. Go ahead, question.
Yeah, I just don't understand what you're referring to when you're talking about revenue collection. What kinds of revenue?
All forms.
But then you're proposing to take the Office for Community Technology out of the Revenue Bureau, and they bring in a bunch of money.
The revenue collection in that case, would continue to reside within the Revenue Bureau. It's just the other activities that that group does would go outside, if that makes sense.
So, for instance, in development services where they're processing permits and taking money, how would you propose that having revenue taking the money would make it more efficient?
So think of it this way. As soon as each department activity is going to go through the process of collecting a receivable, right? And those things, some things are going to be paid on the spot, and then many things are going to become receivables that get paid sometime in the future. Well, at that point that you create a receivable that's not realized initially, there's a process by which sometimes it's painless and sometimes it's very painful to make that collect that receivable. And so once that receivable is created, that's when the activity of the follow-up would shift to the Revenue Bureau, who's more accustomed to it. Another way of thinking of it is, in a way, in a more practical level, take me and our relationship with the city. So when we send an invoice, we create a receivable. And let's say that that invoice isn't paid timely. Would I like to be the one making the call to Matthew and saying, hey, you know, what's the deal? How about payment? Or would we have someone else in our firm who does nothing but that do that? Number one, it relieves me of that, what can sometimes be an awkward conversation, but also they're typically a little bit better at getting results. And so that you can kind of, that's an analogy that would be relevant here.
You're not proposing to change the process for getting permits. When the payment is made at the time,
correct.
It's just when there's something that's owed, like liens and such.
Yes, that's exactly correct.
And you're proposing to take the liens out of the auditor's office and put them into revenue?
I don't believe that's correct. I believe that that is a charter issue. So the answer to that would be no, or at least no at this time. And that would be something that would need to be explored. We're not necessarily suggesting that, but that's it's a reasonable consideration.
So what bureaus are most likely to have these accounts receivables?
Every bureau.
I'm just saying Parks and Development Services, you don't get your permit until you
Thank you. Slide 98. So that should be about 40, cut it in half. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
There you go. I'm not sure that this is all inclusive, but that is a pretty good list of where this has application.
So I'm more confused now because that does include all the things that development services normally, until you pay, you don't get your permit.
In what you stated earlier is still correct. This would not make any change to that that initial interaction with the city. So paying a fee would happen there. But again, think of it, as soon as a receivable is created, that means something has not been paid, then that would go to the revenue department for the follow-up. So anything not happening, in essence, sort of on the spot. And on the spot doesn't have to be cash, it'd be credit card, whatever forms of payment that you take. Does that make sense? And again, the opportunity here is, in centralized versus decentralized, like all things, there's not a right or wrong, but I'm sure that this is quite fertile ground for the city to get better on receivables collection. And so there should be truly an ROI on this activity for the city. Okay, and then the last structural item, and certainly keep the questions coming, and thank you very much for helping me navigate our report. See, I do feel supported. Is facilities, and it's a similar approach, and that is facilities is a very decentralized activity in the city. Again, not uncommon, but probably six of one, half a dozen the other, looking at similar organizations. But what you find is the case here, that it being decentralized, is that you're going to have multiple contracts for similar services, multiple rates that you're going to pay for a similar space, not a full inventory and condition assessment of all of your facilities because it's decentralized. And so even if all that exists, it's going to happen at varying levels in a way by definition, unless you're super, super disciplined in a decentralized model. And I don't think that that's exactly the case here. And so there's the opportunity for this to become more centralized. Again, not a flip a switch thing, something that would likely take time, and that doesn't have to go from A to Z. Can anywhere in between is likely going to be improvement, but where we can get a more comprehensive grasp on A, what we have for facilities, what the conditions are. This is all, again, translates to capital improvement, but looking at our contracts, looking at how we service all of these facilities, and again, I think very fertile ground for a return on investment for the city of, when I mean a return on investment, making some changes that financial gains will be realized by going through that process. And not that making changes isn't sometimes painful, but I think it would be worthwhile in this case. Go ahead.
So the mayor's going to take over all my $500 million worth of backlog facilities deficits. So moved.
Yeah. But I'm bummed, right? Yeah.
Seriously, how does that help having OMF be a part of that problem?
Well, that's actually a good question. It's not about OMF. It's about centralizing the services, or I'll say more centralizing the services. They happen to reside within OMF today. This again would be, and I don't want to overuse this, but sort of a six to one, half a dozen the other. You'll find this facility's function within an OMF or OMF-like components of organizations. You'll find it just as frequently in public works because it's a more of an operational activity. So it happens to reside there today. It doesn't necessarily have to move, but it's not so much about OMF. It's about having a more cohesive, centralized management of those activities across the city.
Right, but currently OMF takes care of some of our facilities and the different bureaus take care of others of them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not seeing how having, I actually love it if facilities in OMF was going to take care of all of the parks facilities, but I don't see how that creates an efficiency.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. We have a centralized function and you're just able to get contracting for maintenance services for the whole, consolidating contracts for larger amounts of facilities, you're usually able to get better prices on contracts. The numbers of people that what we found before when it was decentralized, you'd have different policies about how big the office space is, how many square feet each cubicle will be in one place versus another place. But purchasing for contracts and those kinds of things centralized usually gets you better prices and more consistency in those contracts.
Can I comment too? I think the other opportunity in looking at common databases to manage facilities and having subsidiary ledgers based on the bureaus, it allows you to look at your overall property layout within the city and what the total exposure you have and what the total valuation you have. And when you're insuring against liability and property risks, sometimes you consolidate those things and you do more efficient contracting mm-hmm. for insurance and other services. It'll actually save you money because of the maximum foreseeable losses and some other issues related to liability. So having a common database will allow the city to really look at what its true investment is, how do we best manage it from a liability and a risk management standpoint, and then how do we service it with support services that could be leveraged across multiple bureaus.
You know, it reminds me of the discussion we've been having about the disposition of surplus property, because we have very inconsistent policies across the city on, you know, that have different levels of public review and consultation and other things on disposition of property, and that ends up costing us a lot of headaches because of different kinds of public expectations. So I think some consistency here actually also works for the public, on the public side, in understanding.
And what you capitalize, having common policies on what you have to capitalize versus expense, so that there's a common strategy across it. I mean, a lot of companies have a $500 minimum on capitalizing equipment. So facilities are equipment, too. So you want to look at what your equipment is, how you depreciate it or expense it. And so having those common rules will allow you to really kind of budget forward and plan for the total city under one network.
We'd certainly have the number. I'm still not understanding exactly what you're talking about, because managing a swimming pool is really different from managing an office building.
And
managing 10 swimming pools is a skill set unto itself. So I'm not seeing I just don't understand what you're proposing, that all of the facilities folks from the different bureaus would go to OMF?
No. And that could be. But the example about the database was the perfect one and where I was actually going to go. So first think of it, you can kind of think of it in tiers. Think of information at the top of the pyramid. And let's centralize information first. So how can we make better decisions? How do we have better information about our facilities? And then that can drill down to where it makes sense in terms of all the various activities that support that. And perhaps we did a slightly disservice in using the word centralization. The first thing you want to do is coordinated, right? And so at a minimum, you want the information. You want the information to all the funnel to one place so we know, A, what all do we have, all the comments that were made about, so then how do we manage those resources as efficiently and effectively as possible? Would all of the maintenance activities that associate with facilities suddenly become part of OMF? I would personally say that's not where you want to go. And if you think of a continuum from the minimum is we have centralized information, the maximum is we have every facilities-related individual within this facilities group, that it's somewhere in between. And we wouldn't prescribe or pretend to prescribe what that right balance is, but you want to start here. And then you progress as makes sense. But the key part is you can't take advantage of the economies of scale, better contracting, better decisions until you at least have your arms around the information. And that's our first main opportunity here. Does that make better sense? Good questions. Okay? All right. And so I'm going to switch to leadership as the next topic. Is that all right? Ready for that? And this is relatively simple. I know we may have a lot of discussion on this, but we really focused in on three key positions. And I know a lot of people think, well, the study was all about whether you need a CFO or not, and that was a component, but one of many components of things we looked at. And so based on what we learned, we see, and you could make this argument for other positions, but we're going to limit it to this. The CAO, for the sake of argument, we'll call a CFO, but the director of our recommended Bureau of Revenue and Finance, and your CBO, your city budget officer, are three key roles relative to finance, relative to overall management of the city, that we believe should have dual responsibility. And you, in essence, affirm that with how you dealt with the city budget office. And you said, by ordinance, that really has a dual role to the city budget office internally and to the council and the city as a whole, I'll say externally from the city budget office. We think that the same strategy should be applied to the CAO and the director of the Bureau of Revenue and Finance, which we called, just for simplicity and consistency, a CFO. And you can use the exact same strategy by ordinance, if that seemed to have worked for you. Define the dual role of the CAO in relative to managing OMF and serving the management and finance needs of the city and the council as a whole. With the CFO, similar. Internal duties relative to managing the Bureau of Revenue and Finance and meeting the long-term financial health needs of the city as a whole and the city council. Budget officer, you've already done that. The keys are, and it was clear from our discussions with council, with bureau directors, that you don't have a central place where you all can go to for what is the long-range strategic financial health of the city. That is a paramount role of the director of the proposed Bureau of Revenue and Finance, and most likely a CFO caliber role. That is a need that exists. That is a need that should be filled for everyone's benefit. The CAO role, if you take our recommendation as a whole, a common theme of our recommendations is, again, this: how do we get the whole city on the same page? Not five, we've used the term in the advisory committee, not five CEOs, not 29 offices and bureaus, but one city. And a lot of what it takes to do that is to be able to reach across and operate as one cohesive unit. And we see the CAO role, having no city manager under your commissioner form of government, as key in how you bridge that gap, that opportunity, to be able to be stronger in that capacity. That becomes a vehicle, a conduit for the city council. That becomes a vehicle and a conduit for the bureaus as a whole. I think that there is an express need for that. It has to be the right balance. We talked in our report about that position was created under Vera. It was probably, we've talked about a continuum. You probably were on a strong CAO role then. There was a very tight relationship between the CAO and the mayor. And more recently, probably towards the other end of the continuum in terms of the level of impact and influence of the CAO. With all things, there's a right balance. It's probably not here, and it's probably not there. I think you're pretty close to the right balance now with how you've been operating with your interim CAO. Those gaps are being bridged, and things are headed in the right direction in that regard. So we're just reinforcing, we think staying on that path is in the best interest of the city. Yeah.
Can I ask a question of our distinguished panel? So one of the big questions here was whether this function, the Bureau of Revenue and Finance, and I wholeheartedly agree with the consolidation of the function, whether it would operate within the CAO family or outside. Obviously, the example is in the budget office. The recommendation is it operate within the CAO family with a dual report. So what do you think is the plus and the potential minus of a dual report model? Because I want to be persuaded it's the right one. And I actually think it could work. I think it also depends on who the CAO is. So I have a high degree of confidence, for example, with this guy in that position with a dual report. But I'm just curious whether any of you had concerns either side of the ledger about a dual report concept, because the ultimate goal here is for the council. In a perfect world, we would have someone in this position who operates a little bit like our current budget director, who has license to come into our office and say, I hear you're proposing this, it's nuts. And that may not be something, it may not be a pleasant conversation.
Yes, you've never said that to me.
But, and likewise, he would have license to come before council and say, today you're doing something, but here's why I disagree with this. We want that kind of independence. Just your thoughts on whether you're going to have that same kind of independence within this model, dual report that you might have outside of along that, and any of the trade-offs you consider.
I might come down on it from the perspective of synergies. I mean, you're focused on the independence, and that's really important, and I think worth considering, and allowing people to speak freely, and allowing that clarity of their responsibility to be there, that they can speak up, can identify issues that they have on things. But there is so much to be gained from the breaking down the walls, bringing in these different functions together, and having them function, and having them kind of play off and get the synergies off of one another, that I end up there long term. I also, one of the pieces for me that was really important as we went through the recommendations is the model survivable through many election cycles? And I wonder sometimes, depending on who that person is that you hire, and who the five people are that serve in elected positions, whether a just independent, you know, on the side, whether that works all of the time through many election cycles, or whether a more consolidated approach is likely to survive lots of election cycles.
I'm Cindy Nicol. So I was at the City of San Francisco before, and we kind of had a sort of a similar situation where we're reporting, the airport there is a city department, and we were reporting both to the mayor appointed commission, airport commission, as well as the board of supervisors. And it works. We just ended up having to be very clear about, it was more formal than what you're talking about, but the reality was, so we had formal things that we had to go to the commission on, formal things we had to go to the board of supervisors on. It works, and I think, though, the ability to go into someone's office does depend on the nature of both people.
I mean, if the council has a formal role in approving this position, does it give us a further assurance that that person will feel uninhibited in the dual report and less likely to be silenced or edited by one of the reports?
I would think so.
Because that's one of not. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things I think we want to make sure it's not. I'm sorry.
You know, Fred is not known as a tyrant, but his successor could be, you know, more of a control freak. And I think the council feels very strongly that this person needs to know that they can give their unvarnished advice to the council, even in those circumstances where the CAO may have a difference of opinion, in which case we can thrash that out. But not to have that information withheld, because we get to make the call on a policy question, and we don't want someone inhibited from saying, you know, I disagree with the approach you're taking.
Yeah, and I would add to that, again, for excuse sort of the broken record, you will find If you look at other cities, other counties, other local forms of local government, you will find, I'll use the city as an example, you'll find many CFOs, director of finance, whatever they happen to be called, reporting to the city manager. Almost in most cases, every once in a while, you'll have some reporting to the city council. But there's always a layer. They might report to a deputy city manager who's in charge of all the support services, i.e. OMF here. So it should never be an issue. However, I would say you set the precedent of using an ordinance to create the CBO office and position. Just do the same thing. Make it clear what your expectations are. I hearken back to one of our committee meetings, and I forget who asked the question, but it was a great one. It was, is this about having the right person or about having the right structure? And I was like, it's about both. You shouldn't just rely on having the right person, because the winds will shift and suddenly the right person is not the right person anymore. You have the right structure. The right structure is great, but if you don't also have the right person, it doesn't matter that you have the right structure, because it's ineffective. And so you have to have both. And the right answer here is what's the right answer for the city of Portland. And I would say take the model you've used, extend the CBO to the CFO to the CAO. That's what you need. Define what you want. Now you've structured it, and then you always have the challenge of having the right person.
And talking to Fred about it and having a chance to reflect on it, my own personal view is I think you've struck an elegant compromise.
I'd like to think so.
I'm not sure. I don't know that going into this process everyone assumed this is where you land, but I think you came up with something that is elegant. And you're working within, like you said about the Independent Budget Office, if this had come to you as a threshold question, you might have had a different view, but because it came to you as an existing decision of the council, you made peace with it. But here, you think keep staying within the CAO family, OMF family, has other benefits. And I have to say, I think I'm persuaded.
Okay. Awesome. Good. Great discussion. So I'm going to go to the third topic under our tier one recommendation. That's management tools. And you know, I'm working off of one of our committee presentations, so I've totally lost track of where we are in the report. Thank you. See? Yeah. So two concepts here. One is just creating a more comprehensive, a more leverageable, what we'd call planning and performance framework for the city. Again, this is in the context of how do we get everyone on the same page, marching to the same tune, or however you want to call it. And we came into this, and when we first sort of broached this topic was, well, we've got the Portland plan. I've read the Portland plan. Don't ask me what it says because I read it a long time ago, but I read it and I was like, I was impressed by it. But what we didn't hear was that there was unequivocal reference to that as that is our strategic plan. Some certainly referred to it as our strategic plan. Some didn't. Some subscribed to some of its content. It doesn't have police and fire covered. And so this isn't a damnation of the Portland plan. There is today no seminal comprehensive document that I believe the five of you and the 29 or so office and bureau directors can say, this is what we're executing, these are the priorities, these are the strategies, and these are the metrics by which we measure are we on the right track. Now, there are pieces of it all over the place, and I didn't say at the beginning of this, we work with a lot of cities. We've worked with Portland before, but I hear in other circles Portland viewed as a leader in a lot of regards, and I would say, based on this experience, you are. So this isn't in any way a shame on you. But I do believe that what the Portland plan represents in terms of the potential for a strategic plan, and the other components, which would be clear priorities, clear strategies, clear metrics that everyone has agreed on, so that when decisions need to be made, we say, is it in here? Are we doing this? Does it align with that? Then we try to make it happen. If it doesn't, then we say, well, why would we do it? And today, you don't have the benefit of the clarity of that. The 29 or so office and bureau directors don't have the clarity of that, which makes your life more difficult. Are we saying the first thing that you need to do is go through this huge strategic planning effort? No. You put a ton of effort into the Portland plan. Imagine there's a ton of leverage of that document. What we're saying is, however works realistically here, that you work towards, let's get some of these components more comprehensively in place, more clarified, that we collectively know, pick a period of time. Our 10-year goals are what the strategies that need to get there, what do we measure to make sure we're on track, and then that's what you, the five of you, Dan included, if you're here, are holding your 29 directors accountable for. That's what they're trying to execute. And as they develop their business plans, which exist to varying degrees, because I would say, well, what are you accomplishing? And they can't say, well, I'm doing that, because that doesn't exist in total. And so this becomes a tool for you, becomes a tool for them to say, here's how we fit into that equation.
So most of the bureaus have strategic plans. So how would this proposed strategic plan integrate the bureau plans and direct funding? Because a lot of the, how do you get there? It depends on, do we have any funding?
Great question. So some of this will, my first comment will seem a little bit, I'll say academic, and then I'll try to be more practical. So academically or theoretically, you don't want your bureaus to have strategic plans. You want them to have business plans that are executing the city's strategic plan. But I'll pick on OMF because that's the one I actually read and know the best. So OMF has a strategic plan. And it's okay. What's good about it, it is addresses a bunch of different facets of what OMF does, identifies some strategies, but it's not quantitative. There aren't for the most part metrics in it. There isn't an action plan of what it's doing, when to accomplish it, and certainly to my previous point, they wouldn't be able to say this is how it aligns with the city's strategic plan, which is what you should expect. You should say, what is your business plan for accomplishing what we're trying to achieve as a city as a whole? And that correlation can't exist because the component parts don't exist.
I'm not following you. Why, okay. Parks, for example, would want just a business plan and not a strategic plan?
Well, and that's kind of the academic or the semantics. So what I would call a strategic plan is something that is relatively high level. It's going to establish goals that the city, so think of it this way, we're here today, where do we want to be in 5 years? What is it going to take for us to get there? You need to identify strategies to get there. A department or a bureau would develop a plan that says, here are all the details that we need to do our part of the city's strategic plan. So a business plan is going to go into a lot more detail. It's going to have a financial statement. It's going to have specific tactics, action plans. This is specifically what we're going to execute. It's about implementation. Thanks. That's a simpler way of saying it. And so you need the bureaus need the umbrella of the clarity of umbrella of what are we trying to execute. So it's not what, and sorry, it shouldn't be, this is what my commissioner wants to achieve. Now, on one hand, that's absolutely true. That's what it is because you're a commissioned form of government. But at the same time, it should be, but the commissioners have a strategic plan that you've agreed to, this is what we're trying to accomplish. And all of the things that happen should align with that and not, I align with this silo and I align with this silo. it needs to align across. And how do you make decisions on this is more important than that? Sorry.
You know, as I listen to you, our situation may actually be more dire than even you imagine. So, for example, we have no general rule that applies to the adoption of Bureau strategic plans. So they don't even, by some rule or policy, come to council routinely for review and approval.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be within Commissioner Novick's purview to have to develop a new strategic plan for transportation that
right.
may or may not be inconsistent with some of the guidelines we as a council adopt at budget or some values propositions, where he's not required to bring it to council. And unless one of us reads it, we wouldn't know that, you know, he's decided to go all in on
X,
something.
Yeah.
Right. And nor is it held to any particular standard of content or coordination.
Right.
Exactly. And number two, another complicating factor, and I'm reminded of this every time I get a new assignment. We have no consistent policy about doing annual reviews for bureau directors. In fact, there's no specific requirement that we do annual reviews. And so, in some bureau directors, theoretically, could have gone years without a commissioner in charge saying, "Oh, by the way, you know all those things we put in the strategic plan or something else. You know, we want you to focus on three, and we'd like you to move the needle as follows." So, I don't want to take some of your concerns and turn it into a full-blown fever, but
right.
it actually may be even less coordinated than you might imagine. And I have never quite understood that piece about bureaus doing a strategic plan and making really fundamental decisions about priorities and spending, and that not being a matter of council concern. That doesn't make sense to me. And I'm not saying it's abused, but I do think it creates inconsistencies and anomalies that only in this form of government would you see.
I have gone through a couple of strategic plan processes, and I wound up as confused at the beginning in both of them. But I mean, I think I do have some sense of what I would hope a strategic plan would help us to do as a city. One example would be if we have a bunch of money in the fall bump, how do we decide to spend it? I mean, the mayor with the last bump decided to spend a lot of it reducing debt, and I thought that was a good thing to do. But it would have been nice to say if the mayor had been able to point to, well, the strategic plan says that our number one priority in this next 5 years is reducing debt, and that's why we're doing that. Another thing, and I hesitate to say this, given that we're about to propose a new source of revenue, a particular thing, is you could theoretically have a strategic plan that says, here is the cap of the amount of revenue that we expect to be collecting from our citizens. You know, on a per capita or, you know, per income basis. And any revenue raising measures that we have to collectively fit within that cap. So we need to figure out how we're going to allocate that total revenue under it. I mean, I think that basically, I mean, I would hope that a strategic plan would help us determine priorities when in one way or another we're competing for resources.
And you might even be making then about, you know, if we're going to go after a new revenue source for maintaining roads, it may, from a strategic standpoint, say, you know what, and fit under that cap, we're not going to go out for a parks levy for the next 5 years because our priority is roads versus parks right now. Or it may be that we're going to reduce the burden on citizens because we're going to hold the cost of sewer and water to inflation instead of inflation plus 2%. And, you know, and strategically look at all of the costs that citizens pay and say, okay, here's how we're balancing it across parks and roads and water and sewer, and you are the holder of that, not the bureaus.
Just
I didn't even get 24 hours, a decent interview before you start a lot of that stuff.
Just,
that's utilities. You couldn't even get 24 hours to save for the
moment. Just throw out another example. If you look at urban renewal, we could have a strategic plan that says we actually expect to shut down all of the URAs by 2030, and here is what we're going to do with the, quote, extra money. We will dedicate it to the following services, or we will reduce property taxes in the city by X percent in order to reflect the fact that we think urban renewal has done its job.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that it does is by taking it the next level up to the strategic plan, because it is a bottoms-up and top-down process, is it avoids conflict. And actually, one bureau doing something that can affect negatively the cost of another bureau. You know, Fred Meyer, we had this discussion all the time because the people that did the rental properties in the Fred Meyer stores thought that was the highest and best use of that property. And it wasn't always, because if we had needed an expansion of the store, the return on that space, taking the and converting it back into retail space, might have a higher return. But if we just let them run independent, the decision can adversely affect the bottom line of the total. So I think those kind of decisions start to drive both financial outcomes and overall performance. And the other thing you do, you start to get the combined balance sheet look, too, as part of the process, which is kind of long-term focus.
I want to add something that may or may not be helpful, but there's a little more information. There's a lot of work done in the Portland plan, and I had nothing to do with that. But there's a lot there that could get close to a strategic plan but needs some work. And on the other end of it, Andrew and CBO are doing performance management indicators that you saw some of, which we need at that end. So somewhere between improving the Portland plan and the performance management indicators, we need to sharpen up the connection between strategic plan and bureau business plans and keep working on the performance management. And there's a pretty good system that's reachable, and it's not immediate, but there's some people worrying about that now and how to improve it.
And all of those, that's on the right path. And so, again, doesn't mean that you got to change the world in a day, but having the right sort of trajectory to move towards that, again, I think will be beneficial. In a similar vein, although ironically, Amanda, I'm going to just admit it right now, we say develop a citywide technology strategic plan, so I just contradicted myself in terms of use of terms. But it is common to talk about technology in a strategic planning sort of context. You've done some great things in technology recently. You had assessment, you've identified 10 priorities as far as initiatives, like almost any entity, public or private, technology can be a sinkhole. It's when we do efficiency studies, it's typically the place that you can maybe make cuts here and here, and you can almost never make cuts there. And the client's always like, that wasn't your job, but technology you got to stay with, and it requires a lot of investment. All we're saying here is relative to management tools is that with all that's on your plate from a technology perspective, not only in terms of the assessment that you did and what you've learned from that, but the increasing reliance by your customers within the city, i.e. your offices and bureaus, to be able to leverage technology for them each to be more efficient, that you really need something that from a technology standpoint you can point to as this is what we're accomplishing, and so that we don't have the hundreds of different applications that are just happening on a bureau and office by office basis. We need to funnel that. It's in a way similar to the revenue, similar to the facilities, similar to a citywide strategic plan. We need that common vision that we know this is what we're trying to execute, and then we make decisions based on that. Otherwise, it's just so easy to be doing so many different things and not getting the leverage and the economies of scale and the better information that you would. So that's just another area that needs that attention. And then just lastly, relative to that is just IT governance. And this is, again, in a way you could call this a management tool, but to aid you in the process of technology decisions, which is a challenge everywhere, is one thing that you don't have is a form of IT governance that will allow you to make those decisions. And this is one of the places that the committee weighed in and helped refine our recommendations some, and that was, but this is not about just creating a governance committee, which we're recommending, but is empowering your chief technology officer to make those recommendations, bring those decisions, you know, those recommendations for your decision to the council, in that what a committee and empowerment of the CTO do is it gives you those central focuses. The committee gives you the citywide perspective, so it's not just the CTO.